Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Greg Pickle, final half hour from PennLive.com. We'll talk Penn State football and also recruiting with Greg. Our thanks to Todd Zalecki of MLB.com in the previous half hour. Jerry Krasnick, ESPN.com, this half hour to talk about the untimely death of Roy Halladay. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. Anytime the Knicks win, it's a big deal.
Eight to shoot. Up top, it's Zeller. Drives on Hardaway. Gets in the lane. O'Quinn denied him. Zeller got it back, and he's denied by Porzingis. And O'Quinn, another time, another block shot. And Porzingis is fired up as he pumps his fist. What a sequence. And even with a foul, the crowd is energized.
They blocked Zeller's shot four times.
Which is great. They also committed a foul on the play. Welcome to another season of Knicks basketball. They beat the Charlotte Hornets last night, 118-113. There's a parade in Midtown Manhattan today. All right, let's bring in Jerry Krasnick, ESPN.com. Obviously, it's a tough time to, you know, you'd like to be sitting here and saying, hey, you know, Jerry, let's talk about the Cy Young Award winner. Let's talk about the MVP instead. Obviously, tragic news, not so easy. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Sure, Steve. No problem.
Let's start with what was just your reaction when you heard about it right away yesterday.
Well, honestly, you get physically kind of, you get sick. You know, you just, you hear stuff like that, and you say, geez, can this really be true? And to me, it sort of summoned memories from last September when the Jose Fernandez thing started floating around. You know, right. You just say, is this really happening? And then gradually the pieces just started to fit. You know, if a guy like Roy Halladay has a single-engine plane, and then they find that the plane belongs to him, you're saying, well, what are the realistic chances that he let somebody borrow his plane?
Right, exactly.
And fly it. So you kind of knew, and we were just waiting for official confirmation for an hour. So that really just prolonged the agony of it. And it was a tough thing. It's just, you cover these things and you see anybody, you know, any tragedy, obviously, you know, a shooting in a church. I mean, you don't know the people. So, but it doesn't make you feel any less terrible about it. And in this case, though, you know, it's a young athlete, he's 40 years old, he's got a family, and you just look at that, and you mourn everything that happened, and you wish you could turn back the clock a day and prevent it from taking place.
As a pitcher in his career, what were your thoughts as you watched his career play out as to where he stood in the current era of baseball?
Well, he was one of those guys who really was, you know, you hear the word throwback sometimes, you know, that
right.
This guy pitched like the old time guys. And I think you can say that now about a guy like Justin Verlander. I mean, he's a guy that you look at and you say, hey, I could have seen this guy pitching in the 70s and the 80s. You know, he didn't want to give the ball up. He's not one of these guys who's happy when he throws six innings and gives up three runs. You know, he wants to be in there from the first pitch to the last. And Halladay was definitely like that. I mean, I think the thing with Halladay was just that when you look at the litany of injuries he had and some other things, shoulder problems, you know, things that a lot of guys don't get past, he got past them. You know, he reinvented himself and changed his pitch mix and did some different things. And, you know, it would have been great, I think, if he had lasted a little bit longer. I think he threw, what, 16 seasons in the big leagues?
And, yeah.
You know, three or four of them were sort of minimal exposure. But still, for that dozen years or so, you know, he was right up in that upper echelon. I mean, any conversation about the top three or four pitchers in the majors would have to include Roy Halladay's name.
Yeah, there was always the story about Charlie Manuel. Like, okay, we'll go out to the mound when he's not looking.
Yeah.
That was pretty much how it was. Take Roy out at your own risk. He didn't want to leave.
Yeah, I remember Rich Doobie, the former Phillies pitching coach, was talking about that yesterday when I talked to him. There was a game, I think, in April where he had thrown like seven or eight innings and it was kind of cold out, and Charlie said, "We're taking him out." And Halliday's like, "What? You're taking me out?" And they had to talk to him and say, "Look, we're going to need you later in the season." So, they had to sort of justify it to him because he didn't care if it was 48 degrees in April or, 92 degrees in the middle of August. He wanted to be out there on that mound, and he wanted to finish what he started.
And that's what he did. He threw in an era where you feel five or six innings is pretty good, and analytics say don't face a lineup a third time through. This guy wanted nine innings, and that's the throwback you're talking about. I mean, he was the kind of guy that, from the Steve Carlton era that said, "Look, I'm going nine. Whatever happens, happens."
Yeah, but the stat guys and the analytics guys loved him too, because he was a guy who, struck out a lot of guys and never walked anybody. I mean, if he walked
right.
somebody, it was like, what's going on? He was one of those guys who sort of he fit the new mold of the great pitcher that analytics are kind to, but the old-time scouts and the old ball people loved him too, just because of the way he approached the job.
My understanding was that when it came to the media, he was not nasty to them or whatever, but it wasn't his favorite thing to do. How much contact, Jerry, did you have with him over time?
Well, I wasn't a beat writer, so I
right.
wasn't there all the time. But I do remember a specific occasion, and I've told this to people in the last day or so. At the end of one of the seasons, I can't remember if it was 10 or 11, the Phillies were getting ready to clinch, and they were going into the postseason. And I was assigned a Roy Halladay story, and I went through the PR staff, and I said, "Look, I'd like to get him in the next few days." And every day it was like, you can't get him because he's working or he's preparing or that sort of thing. And finally I went down to Washington. That's where they were going to clinch. And they did. They clinched the division in Washington. And I was supposed to talk to him, I think, after the game. But I remember this vividly. In the clubhouse, all the players were in there basically like partying and stuff. And popping the champagne and had the goggles on, and he had gone in after the game and done a workout.
Right.
He came back dripping with sweat. And I can't remember if they waited for him or not, but he was working out, after the game when everybody else was in party mode. And we never did the interview that night. Like, he was just too wiped out and he couldn't do it. So I had to stay an extra day, and I said, "Look, I really need to get you tomorrow. I wasn't planning on staying for tomorrow's game." But sure enough, I got there the next day, and at 3:30, he was right there waiting for me, and he gave me probably a good 20 minutes. And when he engaged with you, like, he would look you in the eye. He would be very thoughtful with his answers. He was very sincere. He wasn't one of these guys who was like, looking at his phone while you were talking to him.
He gave you
a lot of respect, I just think that's the way he was with everybody. So time was a little difficult to get with him, but when you did get his time, it was certainly worth the wait.
Jerry, what was the sense of he ended up taking a one-day contract and he retired with the Blue Jays? What did he mean to the Blue Jays franchise? And then, your opinion, in just the four short years he was in Philadelphia, what did he mean to the Phillies franchise?
Yeah, it's funny yesterday, because when you heard, that he had passed, a lot of the outlets said, "Well, former Phillies pitcher Roy Halladay."
And, right.
You looked, I think, he won 148 of his 203 wins, six of his eight All-Star teams. you know, one of his two Cy Youngs were in Toronto. So I just think when he was with the Phillies, it was really a special time for the franchise. I mean, the Phillies were the holy grail of baseball. I mean, they were the signature franchise in the game for 5 or 6 years. And, you know, when he came in, it was just such a, you know, taking the pitching staff and the team to a completely different level. And, you know, look at the things he did. I mean, he threw a perfect game, one of only 23 perfect games in history. He pitched a no-hitter in the postseason, you know. So he was more than a rise-to-the-occasion guy. And I just think the time that he joined Philly, it was such a special time for the franchise. And he was such an impactful figure that it really elevated his profile, you know, beyond the mere 4 years that he was in Philly.
Yeah, it's interesting because with the, you know, you think about him, I don't think people realize he was only there 4 years. I think people think he was there 8-9 years and had split half his career in Toronto and half his career in Philadelphia and said it was 75-25.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, it was in terms of time, and I think people in Toronto, look at him with the same level of reverence and love that the Phillies had. You know, it was certainly
right.
That was the place where he grew up and became a pitcher, and some of his main influences, you know, Mel Queen and these other guys, you know, he learned to be a professional. But, you know, that's the mark of the guy, I guess, is that even if he was only in Philadelphia 4 years, you know, they quickly came to look at him as one of their own.
Well, I look at him in the same vein. I look at Pedro Martinez. Pedro Martinez goes through the Expos system, goes to the Red Sox, really carves out a legacy with Boston because they were contending in the thick of it all the time. I look at Roy Halladay, where he did exactly what the people in Philadelphia hoped he would do, like the people in Boston hoped that Pedro Martinez would do for them. And he won, and he pitched in big games, and he won big games. And I think that's probably the reason why we think of him so much as a Philly.
Yeah, and he also left it out there, you know, because the last year or two weren't that pleasant.
That's right, yeah.
People I was talking to, Rich Doobie and these guys, are saying, you know, he went out there with shoulder problems and back problems and a lot of issues where a lot of guys would have just said, you know what, I don't need this. But, you know, he went out there and tried as much as he could, and he just couldn't pitch to his standards. So, you know, a lot of times there's a tendency after these guys, you know, die or whatever, suddenly to make them larger in death than they were in life. But I don't think that's the case with Roy Halladay. I think everybody who was around him in Philadelphia and I'm sure in Toronto, you know, just said at the time, I'm in the presence of greatness here.
Yeah. Jerry, an absolute pleasure. Obviously the easiest topic to discuss, the last thing we wanted to talk about today, but I appreciate the fact you came on and did have the conversation and give us the insight you did.
Sure, thank you.
Jerry Krasnick, ESPN.com. To Penn State football in the final half hour with Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. We'll take a break. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Penn State Coaches Show featuring James Franklin on the air tomorrow night, and it'll be the duo of Patrick Chambers and James Franklin tomorrow. Looking forward to that, man. The basketball season gets rolling on Friday, and football will be on Saturday, and basketball on Sunday, and basketball on Wednesday, and basketball on Friday, and football on Saturday, and basketball on Monday, Tuesday, basketball Friday, football Saturday. That's my next 15 days. That's not a bad life, is it?
No.
It's a good life.
Yeah, it is.
That is a good life. Now, we've got a lot of high school football coming up. Remember, 94KX is going to be carrying the Sealands Go broadcast with Pat O'Brien and Ryan Brandt coming up on Friday night. And, of course, Kevin and the coach, Dick Hort, will be right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It's going to be a 7 o'clock kick, 6:30 airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, 7 o'clock kick, 6 o'clock airtime on 94KX. Because remember, Bucknell basketball at Monmouth is going to be on Eagle 107. So that's how we're going to do it. I think I got all that right, right?
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. And actually, what we're going to do on Friday, before we crank up your broadcast with DJ over in the Jordan Center, I'm going to hang in here in studio for about 15, 20 minutes, and we're going to talk high school football with Mitch Rupert from the Williamsport Sun-Gazette.
Mitch is a great guy.
Yes, yes.
I really like. I have a lot of respect for Mitch. I like Mitch.
Excellent writer. It doesn't matter if it's baseball or football, and he is just a diehard wrestling fan. So yeah, since Penn State and Army get their wrestling season rolling tomorrow night, I would not be surprised if Mitch will be Matt's side tomorrow night at Rec Hall. So maybe
he'll shut them out.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a quick wrestling question in with Mitch on a Friday afternoon. So we'll hang with Mitch for about 15 and then get to you then at 3:30, and we'll crank up some hoops and football. And for a sports fan, love it. Love this time of year.
Boy. Quadruple overtime. It's now 20 after 7. Skippy, it's my moment. They took away my moment. Let me tell you that Dick Carter story about the Penn State-Alabama game. In 1982. And Alabama comes up. Penn State's going to play Georgia in the Sugar Bowl for the national championship. And Alabama comes up and warms up. And they've got T-shirts on that say, "Go Penn State, beat Georgia, be number one." Well, they start warming up. And the crowd, they're going insane. And then when Alabama's done warming up, they take off the T-shirts and they throw them into the crowd, and the crowd's going crazy. And it's my first full year on the Penn State Sports Network, and I'm standing there with Dick Carter after doing the pregame show, and he says, Steve, they took my crowd. Game went triple overtime. And that was the last triple overtime game I did until last season at Indiana.
I remember that last year. Yeah, I was actually here in studio. I was running the Bucknell game over on Eagle 107, and I was watching that Penn State-Indiana game on the iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I blurted it out right. Well, you've only done one. You usually remember it. And Dick's like, "How do you remember that?" I said, "Well, Dick, I've only done one." I said, "Let's not make it like it's some remarkable thing I came up with here." I said, "My memories were a bit limited." Let's go to the selection category here. Oh, that's right, one. Wasn't that remarkable? I remembered it. But
now your name and limited memory when it comes to Penn State sports. Sorry, they're not in the same sentence. Sorry.
Well,
just not.
Well, so you got, I mean, so you talk about, like, they took my crowd away. Well, that's, you know, like, you took my moment away. They went quadruple overtime. Sorry, man. What a game. You should have heard it on 94KX. Pacing back and forth. Banging his fist on tables. I just can't, you know.
They'll be rolling through the game, and you got Cotrillo doing the play-by-play on SECVA. Can you hold it down? I'm trying to call a game over here.
Yeah. Excuse me. All right.
They'll get to you, and Steve and Dick are done.
Yeah, not quite done yet. It's okay. We got it. It's my moment. No. You don't seem to understand, like, for the Shikellamy and Sealands Grove players, it's actually their moment.
Yes.
I played once. I played.
I'll be honest with you. I'll probably be chomping at the bit Friday night here in studio running it. I mean, if there's one game I would want to be at for a change instead of being up here in studio running the games for the last 5 years, it'd be this game on Friday night. That's going to be a fun scene.
Let's just do the show out there.
Okay, you got the brain going here. I'm trying to think, okay, is there a way? Oh, sure, there's definitely a way.
Sure there is.
Well, there's a will, there's a way.
I mean, isn't this the kind of game that you should be at with presents?
I like the way you think.
I just think that, look, for us in our area, it's the only game really on the schedule, right? So we devote all our resources to that. Just a thought.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to bring in from PennLive.com and the Patriot News, Greg Pickle. Greg, welcome back to the show. It's great to hear you.
Steve, always a pleasure to be on. Glad to be back.
I want to start with the recruiting end of it because this early signing period is creeping up on everybody, I think maybe a little faster than some realize. So how do you view it at this point, and how many would you expect Penn State to potentially sign once the doors open on the 20th of December?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think this is something that a lot of coaching staffs across the country, and of course anyone that follows recruiting, is trying to figure out is, if a kid doesn't sign but he's verbally committed, what does that mean? Is it because he wants to wait and sign with his teammates on the actual signing day? Or is it because he wants to take more visits and doesn't want to be tied into the school that he's verbally committed to? Is there another reason, you know, whether it's team-related, family-related, school-related, so on and so forth? We have a lot of questions answered and asked in that three-day window, December 20th at 7 a.m. local time to December 22nd at a prospect's 11:59 p.m. local time that they can sign, because you would expect all of Penn State's 22 class of 2018 verbal commitments to sign and send and seal their letter of intent at that point in time. But I don't know. It just feels like things usually do not go off without a hitch, and that's just not at Penn State. That's across college football, as we well know, after the last few weekends. So I think that if I had to guess, it would seem like most of the kids I talk to do plan to sign. So you're looking at maybe 2022 being the final number. Of course, Penn State would love to get all 22 in, but I don't know. It feels like something will go off a little sideways, or it won't go off without a hitch. So I don't think you'll see the full class sign. It would obviously be very good news for Penn State if it did, but we'll have to see how things play out. It seems like kids are starting to sort of realize as well, just like you said, Steve, that this thing's coming up a lot sooner than most expect.
Of those that you believe, just through your personal contact, that are at least 90% that they will sign at that point, I'll use that and I'll leave a 10% margin of error here for you. Is it a relief to them to have this early signing period and to end the process at this point, or how do they feel in general about it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that for most of the kids that we've come in contact with, it's almost, I would say some will probably feel relief, but most of these guys have been committed so long that other schools aren't bothering them. Penn State's not in a position where it's going to get recruits poached, obviously, even though the two losses have things on a sour note right now. overall, the program's moving in the right direction. There's not really a whole lot to sell against Penn State. So I don't think you'll see too many of these kids wandering around wanting to take visits elsewhere, so on and so forth. That's why I think it could be all 22 if things go as planned, of course. So I think the relief's a good word, though. I think a lot of these kids look at it as, you know, they don't have to worry about it the rest of the year. They finish up their fall semester. Some schools have three semesters, so they'll be starting their winter semester, however it works out with their academic calendar. They don't have to worry about recruiting. You know, coach can come see them. Coach can talk to them. Coach can get them the strength and conditioning program, all of those kind of things that previously you had to wait until January and February for. Now you can get rocking and rolling on it now. Definitely no other schools can bug you, so that's a plus, too. And for the coaching staff, I think it's a big deal as well. You don't have to worry about these guys. You don't have to – it's not that you don't want to go see them, but you don't have to recruit these guys to the quote-unquote finish line. You don't have to spend all of January, you know, messing around, making sure a kid's not going anywhere else, worrying about whether he's going to take any other visits, so on and so forth. And I think what you'll find with that is that if you're able to lock your group up early, or most of your group up early, which Penn State should be able to do – then what you'll find is coaches are able to focus more on the next class. They're able to build more relationships with the 2019 kids in this instance, the 2020 kids in this instance, and they're also able to really put all their time and energy into the last group, whether it's two, three, four, however many guys Penn State will have spots left for at that point in time to pursue them. So I think it's good for everyone. I know that it makes kids commit sooner. Josh Gaddis was talking on a conference call last week about the fact that one of the things they've noticed is that it makes kids commit sooner, it speeds up the process. That's true. But for the ones that really want to go to Penn State, which is almost the entirety of this 22 class 2018 verbal commits, you know, there's a few that had entertained other options and had really, you know, broke down the process before committing. But in terms of the majority of the class, these are Penn State kids through and through. They want to come to Penn State. And as James Franklin's always said, those are the kids that this is intended for. Let them sign early and move on with preparing for the rest of their high school career and then, of course, college as well.
Now let's flip it over to the other side. You and I both know that there are going to be some high-profile programs that are going to change coaches between now and the end of Thanksgiving weekend. How far behind potentially does that put a new coaching staff when you've got people committing early to other places and now are off the board, and the group that was recruited before you, they might now start looking around and they might be off the board?
Well, yeah, it's going to make it messy for two reasons. Number one, you know, when a coach shows up, and it doesn't happen too often because of the bad publicity that it brings with it, but, you know, if a coach shows up at, say, the end of December or the beginning of January, and he doesn't necessarily love the commitments that he has, you know, he has the opportunity to say, sorry, but we don't want to take you anymore. The offer from the old coaching staff isn't valid anymore. And, you know, that's obviously puts kids in a tough situation. And like I said, you don't see it too often because of the fact that, you know, it's just bad publicity to come in and do that. But, you know, it's going to put the coaches in a situation sometimes where they can't get out of the, you know, commitment situation that they may be in. And conversely for the kids, if the coach leaves and they, you know, don't want to play for the coach that comes, or the coach that comes doesn't fit the style of player that they are, they're kind of don't really have an out. As far as I know, that there's nothing built into it that would allow for special waivers or anything like that. So you have kids in a lot of schools thinking about that as well. You know, there's a handful of schools out there right now, probably more, that the coach is still employed, but it's a pretty not well-kept secret that they're probably on the way out and or they're going to leave at the end of the season one way or the other, whether it's the school's choice or the coach's choice. So, yeah, it makes it tough, and I think you'll see some hesitation in some programs. But again, Penn State with these kids, they know their staff stability, and the kids are Penn State kids through and through in terms of where they wanted to go to college. So I don't think it affects Penn State at all. But you're right. I mean, you think back to what James Franklin did when he came to Penn State in 2014, Steve. Imagine the roster now if all the kids that signed with him at Vanderbilt in December, and Trace McSorley's not your quarterback right now. Grant Haley is not a starting corner for you right now. There's a handful of other kids that could have signed somewhere else.
Christian Campbell, Torrance Brown.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you could go down the list of Penn State starters and key reserves and guys that, when James Franklin got here, he convinced them to come to Penn State. That wouldn't be the case if the new The new signing period or the early signing period was in effect back then. So you can just see the sort of trickle-down effect that'll have. There's no question about it. It'll help some of the smaller schools. They won't get their kids coached. Sometimes it's the case. But I think that it'll be interesting to feel this out and sort of see how things go. There's a lot of coaches, and Penn State included, watching to see how things play out. Not at Penn State necessarily, but around the country so they can prepare for what they might have to face some point in the future.
All right, Greg, current football team, line in the sand weekend coming up for Penn State. They need to stop this, as you know, and then get back on the winning track after two very narrow, near misses on the road. What are you seeing out of the football team the last couple of weeks, other than seeing really good competition, obviously?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I think that the frustrating part for a lot of fans is that they were so close. A one-point loss on the road, a three-point loss on the road, some weather conditions and other things, the second loss that sort of muddied things up. Of course, Michigan State dealt with that as well. But, you know, I think the coaching staff, the players, they know. You know, I think they're not immune to the fact of what ails them at this point, which is they struggle to really make the quarterback uncomfortable the last 2 weeks, and they weren't all that great pass blocking or run blocking the last 2 weeks. Pass blocking was a little bit better, of course, than maybe what it's been in the past, but the run game just never got going, and they're aware of it. And I think for a lot of fans, they're frustrated with play calls, with schemes, with the coaching staff. And, you know, I think at some point execution comes into it as well. I know it's cliche, but, you know, you have a pass on fourth down that's catchable. You're not able to haul it in. You have a late penalty on a third down that would have forced a punt in probably overtime, or maybe gave a chance even to drive down the field and kick a game-winning field goal. I mean, I think Penn State's just a step away here, a step away there, a call here, coach or official that, you know, changes the narrative, changes the result, changes the picture of the season. I mean, we're talking about a two-loss football team that if it gets a break here, it gets a break there. It, you know, maybe hands off here or calls a different play there, Steve. They're still undefeated, or maybe they still have one loss. So I get the frustration. I get that fans had very high hopes for this team, as did the program itself, of course. But, you know, they're not as far away as people want to make it out to be. They have some very key things they need to correct. There's no doubt about that. But I think that, you know, when you look at it big picture, things are moving in the right direction. And the fact that they'll probably blow out records doesn't change the fact that things need to be fixed, nor does it change the fact that the last two losses don't necessarily, you know, spell the Titanic, as some have made it out to be so far this week.
In fact, Penn State is 16-3 in its last 19 games. Those three losses by a total of 7 points to USC, Ohio State, and Michigan State. Now, let's just take it someplace else. How do you feel at Ohio State right now that you're 9-3 in your last 12 and all three were blowouts?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's why you see so many talking about Urban Meyer, and, you know, one headline was that he all lost his edge. Another headline was, is Ohio State trending the wrong way? Another headline was, are the Buckeyes, you know, is this all they'll ever be now that, you know, at this point? And, you know, another one was about recruiting and how they recruit like Alabama but don't exactly play that way. So, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know what to think. You know, whether you lose close or you're a blowout, I think that, you know, at the end of the day, there's key things wrong with the Ohio State program. We saw it at Beaver Stadium last year, Steve. They have trouble with protection at times, and they have trouble getting to the quarterback. And, hey, oh, by the way, Penn State is dealing with that same thing right now. The difference being Penn State was able to keep its losses close. And, again, they're a player or two away, whereas if you're the Buckeyes, there is not exactly a player or two I think you could point to in that Iowa game and say, well, if that would have went our way, we may have been able to win the game. So I don't know if it's a grain of salt or a moral victory. I don't know what you want to call it. But certainly both programs are in an interesting point right now. Is one going the right way, one going the wrong way? I don't know. It's a good question, a fair question.
Yeah,
but
nobody
at this
knows.
Point, yeah, right. But I would say at this point that, you know, there should be some comfort for Penn State fans. That it's not, they're not getting blown out. They're not that far away. Sometimes the yardage situation's a mess, yes. But play here and a play there, and we're having a very different conversation, Steve, no doubt about it.
Well, I think, look, I think, and this is only my opinion, so if you think it's wrong, please just jump in and say so. I feel every team in the country, with the exception of Alabama, has, quote, something to work around, and whomever can work around their problem enough, they end up winning more than other people.
Yeah, I mean, I would say even Alabama does. I mean, you look at what they do on offense sometimes, and you know, the Alabama-LSU game at times was a rock fight. It really was.
Yeah.
And I think that Even they have issues. Now, of course, the problem is very few, if any, teams find a way to work around their defense and find a way to score enough points to make Alabama really worry about the fact that its offense can't always produce. So, I mean, I agree with you from that perspective. But, they work around their issue better than anybody. There's no doubt about it. But even they have issues. And, again, if you get a break here, you get a break there. Your issue, James Franklin always says it, that when you win, it minimizes the issues, and when you lose, it maximizes the issues. And boy, the last 2 weeks have done nothing but prove that statement to be correct. And the first 7 weeks proved it correct the other way.
Exactly. Greg, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your insight. I enjoyed the conversation very much.
Always, Steve. Talk to you soon. Have a good week.
Greg Pickle joining us from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. We will come back with more in a moment and wrap it up. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I was asked by someone today if I was going to football or basketball practice today, and I said both. Had to do a little split today. So, we're at that time of the year. And, you know me, I think it's a fun time of the year.
Football practice, then hoops?
Yeah. And I have to do some interviews at basketball. There's a segment on the Unrivaled TV show entitled Roar. I'm the producer of the segment. I write it. I'm the one that puts it together. Now, Alexandra Rabb, she is the one that, as far as I'm concerned, she's the one that really works. I mean, but I do the interviews for it. I write the script. I narrate the script. And then she takes all of that and she puts it all together. Now, I come up with other elements for us. Say, like, look, we need some B-roll of this. We need some pictures of that. And I get it. But she, in the end, she's the one that takes the puzzle and puts it all together. So she actually deserves much more credit than I do.
That's why I tune in every week. Saw the women's gymnastics segment there last week.
Sarah Brown. This week is Zane Rutherford. Got a nice sit-down with Kale. Nice sit-down with Zane. The suit's name did come up at one point.
A little Benton flashback, Columbia County flashback question there.
No, it had to do with restraining orders. So it was... Kale was like, is he still out there? I said, yeah. He says, well, he said, give me a moment. And then on his cell phone, I could tell it was an attorney.
It's funny. We had our weekly meeting this morning, and actually a suit light wrestling reference that was brought up toward the end of the, as we were walking out of the room. So.
It's not that thing about how many ceiling tiles there are in a building. Right?
Something about a nagging knee injury holding him back, you know.
Holding him back from what? Walking to class?
From continuing his athletic career. Whether he was talking about wrestling or football, I wasn't sure about that. I decided not to delve into it further. I figured, we got to get some things done before we head to the Bucknell lunch. So conversation would have lasted longer.
I think the world of his son.
Absolutely you do.
Right. But is the suit kidding? his son is a great mind and a great kid. But athletics is, that ship has sailed, don't you think?
Making another type of impact already at Albright.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is it bad that dad shows up every week at the frat?
Ugh, I know.
It's like, I don't know.
I don't know how he finds time after, taking care of the Bucknell games.
A word came to my mind. The word was creepy. All right, so your dad's here. Oh. I had a friend of mine tell me he was growing up. He lived on a farm, and the driveway was about 100 yards, and he'd run up the hill to his house, and he'd sprint every day because his grandparents lived next door, and if his grandmother saw him, the first thing she would do is make him stop and then do chores. So his goal every day was to go up that hill in such a way where she couldn't see him.
La, 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 can't hear you.
I said, how many times did you succeed with that? He says, twice, and it felt good each time. Okay, all right, yeah, I can see that, sure. I'm not here, right? I'm not here at all. That's a suit. Yeah, he showed up.
Yeah, the parallels between that scenario and every episode of Everybody Loves Raymond.
So. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, he's got two games to do this weekend, both play-by-plays. Did he give you an idea where he is on progress getting ready for both? Because you can't do the one-at-a-time thing. You can't do that here. You know, I always talk about you do one at a time. Hey, look, when they're this close together, you can't. I can't sit there and say that when the basketball team goes to Brooklyn, I'm not going to prepare the whole tournament, because I will, because I'm not going to have the time to do one at a time. And just like, I'm going to sit there and work on Maryland before I even go to Brooklyn. I mean, that's not working on them one at a time. That's trying to have good time management.
Now our guy's ready to go for both. He'll be set to go.
Well, I think it's great that he went over today to Maddie's. I mean, at least get some insight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be kind of, no offense, it'd be kind of an eye-opening experience for him. Because it's obvious he's had nothing but limited contact.
Tempting to make up for lost time today.
Are you sure?
Well, you got to start somewhere. Yeah. You know.
Well, Joe, I'm sure, treated him like gold.
Yes.
And he stood up and he got a standing ovation.
I don't know about that.
Did he stand up?
Joe or Kevin?
Well, Joe, of course.
Joe did, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about the suit?
He stayed put. He sat.
Was he recognized?
No, not really.
Well, that's not good when you're a major personality. He told us he's a major personality. Nobody recognized him? Wow.
Well, a few people spoke with him after the luncheon, so.
Yeah, but I don't want to talk about the constable. I mean, what about the... I'm talking about fans.
Yeah, there's a couple that stopped him after the luncheon. Yeah, Matt and I were ready to go, head back to the car and come back here. And yeah, we were held up by a few minutes for Kevin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And what was the warrant for?
No, I'll let you know when I find out.
Okay. Great to be on the show today. A lot of tough talk today because you're talking about the death of Roy Halladay. But Todd Zalecki and Jerry Krasnick were just great, from MLB.com and ESPN.com, respectively. Fun to talk with Greg Pickle about recruiting. More coming up tomorrow.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.